Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton. And today we're going to talk about everything you never knew you wanted to know about myths and origin stories.
Ooh, I'm very excited. What are we starting with?
We're going to start with amaryllis. You have beautiful big amaryllis plants. Yours are bright red. Is that correct?
Yes, they're super red. They're super tall. They were on my Instagram, but I can take no credit for them. Chaz has grown them from little tiny babies. He takes care of them all year long.
Does he? Yeah. That clearly needs some care to grow a 3-foot plant and have it survive a house full of animals.
Yes.
Well, the story of amaryllis is also quite interesting. And I posted this to social media too, but I think it's worth some discussion. Amaryllis was a maiden, and this is Greek mythology. She was a beautiful young maiden who wanted to capture the attention of Alteo, who was a handsome young shepherd, and all the ladies had their eyes on him.
Of course.
He had no eyes on any of the ladies. He's just shepherding and doing his thing.
He liked his sheep.
He did. But Amaryllis thought she could change him. And so she asked the high priestess, "How can I win his heart?" And she received what I would consider perhaps some advice that's a little suspect. And so the advice that she was given and that she then did was that she should pierce her heart with a golden arrow and she should go to his house every day. Each day she'd go to his house and, hey, and then she'd go home and she's dripping blood the whole time for 30 days. 29 days she does this.
Wow.
On day 30.
Stalker.
Right? There's just so many things. Day 30, she comes, and on that day she shed more blood on the path because probably she's dying by now. But as she goes away, a beautiful amaryllis flower blooms, and suddenly Alteo is all, "Hey, lady," because she's kind of magical.
Oh.
But I feel like we need to be lady bros to Amaryllis and tell her, no, he is not that into you.
Mm-mm.
He likes your magic flowers. I feel like this whole thing is doomed from the start. But that is their meet cute. That's how it happened for them.
So she ended up getting the guy.
Yeah.
Because she was stabbing herself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think this sends some bad messages.
I feel like it does too. So ladies, no, 30 days is 29 too many.
I agree completely. You know, and the fun thing about these myths when I was looking at them is that kind of like Grimm's fairy tales, I was researching those a while ago for a short story that I was working on. And you'd read some of these Grimm's fairy tales. And the same thing with these origin stories where you get to the end and I was left with this feeling of, I don't really know what the moral is here. Mm-hmm.
Cultures have changed. I get that part of it, but I still think even in the cultural context sometimes, I don't know if they're getting what they thought they were out there.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to switch gears and we're going to talk about the Maori people.
I enjoy them.
And the myth of where the Milky Way came from.
Oh, excellent.
So there's a couple of different versions across Polynesia and then over to Australia and New Zealand and all this sort of stuff. The one that I'm focusing on is more New Zealand-y.
Do they have some common threads through that island
area?
Well,
there were some common threads in that, like in Hawaii, they talk about how the Milky Way is the, and I tried to look at some pronunciations for this stuff, and I'm going to do my darndest, but the Mangaroa is a shark that was in Hawaii. They talk about it being thrown up into the sky, and that shape is kind of the Milky Way.
Oh.
This one's a little different. So you have Tane, the god of the forest, and way back in the day, he pushes his parents, Father Sky and Mother Earth, apart, and the space in between them was vast and very dark. And so he went to his siblings, who were the parents of the family of light, and their children were sun, moon, all of the stars, a phosphorus light, which I'm guessing is that light you see on the water.
Oh, sure.
And then I love this, a gloomy light and a small star.
Really? So those are his nieces and nephews, right?
Yeah. But a gloomy light.
A gloomy light.
Yeah. But so Tane asked if he could use these children and spread them across the sky to shine on their mother Earth. So the cool part of the story is that the family of light, the children, they lived in a basket in the first house ever constructed in the world. And when Tane took them into the sky, He brought the basket to carry them, and he left it in the sky. So the idea is that long, dark streak filled with stars is the Milky Way. So mm-hmm. when you look up and you see the Milky Way, you are looking up and seeing stars stuck to the inside of the basket and spilling out of it.
Oh, that's so nice. And it's honoring Mother Earth.
Right?
Oh,
isn't that cool?
That's very lovely. I enjoy that. Honor the mother.
Okay, so we've got flowers, we've got the Milky Way, and you wanted to talk about this word that I can't pronounce.
Rimskvida.
Ooh, that sounds good. Let's do
that
again.
I have to pronounce it like that, doctor, too. Rimskvida.
Ooh.
I found it terrific. This is one where I say go visit the show notes, and there is a Dr. Jackson Crawford, and he does a little class at 17 minutes, and he talks about this. It's actually from the Poetic Edda, contains Norse myths, including Thrymskvida. There's also a link to a gentleman who actually reads it in Old Norse, and he has a very Ooh. Gandalf kind of voice, and it's rich, and you have no idea what he says except for when he says Loki, and then you're like, oh, I'm caught up. Okay,
right on, brother.
And there are many, many poems, and they go back very, very ancient, apparently. And this particular one is about the giant Thrym. He covets Freya and wants her to be his wife. And so in order to gain her, he steals, I've watched the movies enough, I should be able to say this word, Mjolnir, Thor's hammer.
Oh, okay.
He steals Thor's hammer. So instead of letting Freya actually go and marry this guy, Thor says, why don't I borrow your beautiful feathery dress or cloak, and I'll go, I'll pretend to be you. Loki will come. It's good. And so this is suddenly turned into a Norse buddy cop. And
got it.
It's so good. And the Dr. Crawford was talking about how most of the time it's adversarial with Thor and Loki, and which we see in the modern movies. But this is a moment where they definitely have a brotherly journey together. So they go to the land of the giants. Thor is dressed as Freya, ready for a wedding. He's got a veil. And then Loki is dressed as his maid of honor, his bridesmaid. And they're accepted in, like, oh, great, you're here. You've come to marry me. Super. And so they get to the wedding feast. And apparently this is about 8 days later. They arrive. They're doing the wedding feast. Nobody is really worried until Thor sits down and he eats an entire ox on his own, 3 kegs of mead, 8 salmon, and all the food meant for the women.
Wow.
So Thrym is like, that's a little weird, guys. And Loki's being a good wingman, and he says, she is just so excited to marry you. She couldn't eat for 8 days. And Thrym's like, oh, super. So it goes on, and they're to the ceremony piece of things. And so Thrym is ready to complete his bargain. He gives the hammer to Thor, raises the veil first before this. He raises the veil and he comments, sort of like the big bad wolf, my, what shiny eyes you have. He doesn't notice Thor's beard.
Oh,
just shiny eyes. Hmm. And Loki's like, 8 days. So excited. Wedding. And so Thrym gives Thor his hammer, thinking he's presenting it to Freya as an offering. And Thor kills everybody. He and Loki walk away. This is Amy of the happy endings for you all again.
Wow. I was like, yay, wedding.
Hijinks and death. But I just really love that it is like a Norse buddy cop movie. It's terrific.
I love how he didn't notice the beard.
Me too. Yes, it's good. Shiny eyes, just so excited. Glad to be here.
Yay.
It's a good story.
You've got such a happy ending there with him killing everybody.
Should we turn a corner?
Yeah, let's take it up a beat. We're going to talk about hippos. This one, I've got to tell you, made me so happy.
I appreciate your restraint. You sent me a text, didn't tell me anything.
Oh, no,
Such restraint.
I have told everyone in this house about it, though. This is from the Kikuyu people mm-hmm. of Eastern Africa. It's a large ethnic group that lives, a lot of them live in Kenya.
Okay.
And there is a story where long ago, when the good Lord Ngai made his plans for all creatures upon the earth, okay?
Okay.
And he made the hippopotamus as an animal of the forest and plains. But the hippopotamus is eating everything. He has an insatiable appetite. Mm-hmm. And then one day, Hippopotamus is down by the river and it's all cool and calm. And he's like, you know, Lord, I would really like to use the river. Mm-hmm. And Ngai says, here's the deal, though. I really like the little fish in the water. And you have a problem with eating lots of stuff. Yes. And I'm really concerned that if you go into the river, you're going to eat all my little fish.
It's reasonable concern.
Yeah, right. And so the hippopotamus is really upset and he's wandering around in the hot sun and it's really hot. And he's whining all the time. Whine, whine, whine. He goes back and he's like, look, okay, I promise if you let me use the river, I will not eat the fish. And if you let me use the river, I will go in during the day. Mm-hmm. But at night, I will come out and I will eat along the edges, which is what hippos actually do, right?
That's a good deal.
Yeah. And so Guy says, I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like I can trust you. You know, you're going to go in that river. You're going to eat my fish. What can I do? So this is the part that just fills me with joy. So Hippo says, I tell you what, every time I have to poop, I'm going to come out of the river. And hippos, if you've ever seen this or heard this, when they poop on land, they swat their tails back and forth as they're going to the bathroom and they flick it everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah. Flick it just, I mean, for feet to each side. So Hippo says, I tell you what, Lord, I will come out when I poop. I will flick my tail. I will spread it everywhere. So you'll see there's no fish bones in my poop. And you will know that I'm not eating the tiny fish.
Wow.
I can't tell you how happy this makes me.
That's... And did Ngai go for it?
Yes.
He agreed with that toddler logic?
Yep. So in the end, it was agreed that that's how it would work. And the hippo has promised to never eat Ngai's fish.
So you can be in the water by day, eat the plants by night.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That, I can't believe I didn't know that poop fact, first of all.
Oh, well, and I was going to put a picture, a video on the website. And it's kind of juicy. So if you're curious... just go to YouTube, type in hippo pooping, and I'm sure you will find something that will satisfy your curiosity to the level that you need.
Oh my goodness. That was worth the wait.
Right?
I think that's hard to follow.
I know you can't follow it.
No, I don't think we can. I do like the whole Thor and the hippos. They're both big eaters.
They are.
If you want to know more about Thor and the hippo's dietary habits, visit us at brainjunkpodcast.com.
And we will have show notes for this one. We haven't had show notes for a lot of the brainstorms because they're
short. Web addresses.
That's true.
There are very sketchy show notes right now.
But I have some show notes for all the myths and where you can find them and learn more. And you can also find us on Twitter as @mybrainjunk. And Amy and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know. And I guarantee you will not be bored.
Use whichever version you like of
that.
Okay. Hey, editing day, Trace. I'm sorry about all this. Just this whole episode.